This is Ryan Fletcher with Saul Arbus, who is the head of the Government Initiatives Working Group. Thank you for joining us, Saul.
You're more than welcome. It's the working group for a federal Department of Peace.
With a World Peace Forum. And why was the Government Initiatives Working Group formed?
Well, it was formed because in the end of the day, if we want to have change, we need to change at the government level. We need to carry out changes at the government level. We need to see that reflected in policy and program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that most civil society organizations or NGOs seem to focus more internally. They talk to each other, but we have to also talk to government to bring about the changes we seek. And that was the genesis of the Working Group for Government Initiatives.
Okay.
Now, there's two things here that we're talking about. It's a bit confusing. I represent two groups. I represent that working group that we just discussed, but also the Working Group for Federal Department of Peace, which is really the major body that is organizing the event on the 25th of June.
Okay.
In all morning at the World Peace Forum at UBC.
Is this a department that's already existing, or is this...
No, that's why we call ourselves a working group.
Okay.
There are no departments or ministers of peace anywhere in the world, as far as we know, as yet.
Okay.
But we anticipate that when the first one is declared, that other countries will follow suit, and that we'll have a number of them in the next few years.
Okay.
We don't kid ourselves, this might be a long-term project, especially
right.
with the configuration of the current Canadian government. But we are heartened by the kind of support we've received from people like Lloyd Axworthy, the former Minister of Foreign Affairs Canada, and Senator Doug Roach, who both was a senator. He had to retire at 75, as they do. But he also was Canada's ambassador for disarmament in the latter part of the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and also was the chair of the United Nations Disarmament Committee, which... is the most important committee on the disarmament issues at the UN.
Okay. So would disarmament be a big issue for the Department of Peace?
It's a very large issue for the Department of Peace because without disarmament, without particularly nuclear disarmament, the prospects for peace are very dim.
Right.
And the prospect of annihilation still looms very large.
Right. This Department of Peace initiative, is that the end goal of the whole forum itself? Is it getting this underway?
No, but it is stated as one of the, they use the term milestones, one of the outcomes they would like to see would be the formation of departments of peace in many different nations. Now, that's not going to be an immediate outcome,
right?
But that is a long-term desired outcome, and that is why, you know, we are featured for half a day during the forum on departments of peace, and we'll have at that time really the guiding spirit of this whole movement, Congressman Dennis Kucinich from the U.S., a Democrat from Ohio. He also
mm-hmm.
ran as the Democratic nominee, as a nominee for the Democratic nomination for president.
Yeah.
He didn't make that, but he's one of the most progressive of all the congressmen in the United States today.
Oh, it's good to know he exists.
he introduced a bill.
Yeah.
There is a bill before both houses, both Senate and the House,
yeah.
to create a Department of Peace in Washington as a full-level, cabinet-level position.
Yeah.
This is, you know, the American effort has gone farthest so far.
Mm-hmm.
There's also an effort, there's a very organized campaign in the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
in Australia, and in other countries of the world, Japan, and a few other countries where things are beginning but haven't really advanced very far.
Okay,
so there's an initiative now in New Zealand, in Costa Rica,
yeah.
In Italy, or three other countries.
Okay.
So it's a growing international movement,
yeah.
and we have organized ourselves under what we have called the International Initiative for Departments of Peace, which all these countries now are members of, and in that guise we are hosting the second summit for departments of peace at Royal Rose University in Victoria,
okay.
June 21 and 22, prior to coming to the World Peace Forum for our event on the 25th.
Okay.
So really both events, although we're hosting these events really are coming under the international initiative.
Okay. Well, that's great.
There'll be about 20 countries represented in Victoria. So we're very heartened. We were able to find funding to bring delegates from developing countries and countries in transition, and you know, we were able to bring maybe 8 or 10 people in this way, which was missing in the first summit held in London last October, where only those that could afford to come were able to come, and so we didn't have really anything from the Global South except, well, we really didn't have anybody.
Okay.
Palestine perhaps would qualify.
Where does this idea come from, the Department of Peace? What's the genesis of that?
Well, actually, you know, it's been mooted for a long time. Apparently there was an initiative in the 30s in Australia.
Okay.
Since that time, there has been the, and then again in Australia in the mid-80s, and the modern period, really, the contemporary period, begins with the American Initiative under the Peace Alliance in the United States. The Department of Peace campaigns take off at that point, really around 2003.
Okay. Is this this Democrat senator that did that in 2003?
Well, there's over 60...
Or his group?
The way it works in the U.S. is that you need a certain number of sponsors for a bill to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's over 60 in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, there are only 2 to 3, but there were enough to get it introduced.
Okay.
So there's still a considerable way to go, but the movement is definitely building momentum. There's activity in all 50 states and in over 300 congressional districts. So, I mean, obviously we need a change of administration and president before this is going to move anywhere. But because of the performance of the current administration in the U.S., you know, we're seeing increased activity towards the Department of Peace on the part of civil society.
Right. Reactionary, I suppose, kind
yeah.
of thing. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess that's a good thing in some ways.
Well, in some ways it is, because it really encourages people to get active, and that is definitely happening.
Yeah.
You know, the famous American broadcaster, Walter Cronkite,
mm-hmm.
Has now come on board, given a very strong endorsement of the Department of Peace idea. And, you know, that's still an important voice in the United States.
Right.
And I should also mention that, you know, we're also concerned, we're not just concerned with the political and economic aspects here, but also the spiritual aspects. And in that regard, we have had the endorsement both of the Dalai Lama, which we consider very important, and also, and you should know that the Dalai Lama is setting up a center for peace. I'm not sure what it's called, but it'll be called the Dalai Lama Center for Peace Studies or something like that at UBC beginning this September, when he'll be visiting again. And then last week or 2 weeks ago, we had the endorsement of the Bishop Desmond Tutu.
Oh, really?
Received of and chaired the most successful to date of these peace and reconciliation summits after the apartheid period in South Africa. So
okay.
We consider that a very strong endorsement as well.
Yeah, for sure. This is kind of getting philosophical, but I think it might be important to the issue. I find a lot of the things with the World Peace Forum are interested in working from the inside out, but government initiatives would be outside in. Would you be able to talk a little bit about, like, is this like an inside out kind of thing? Like, start with the people and then go with the politics? Or what's the relationship there?
Well, I mean, the really important point is that you've got to build a groundswell of support in civil society before this thing is going to move. It's not going to suddenly happen. But at the same time, we are working through channels that we are have opened and consistently try to open within government. We have gone the farthest so far with the New Democratic Party, with its 30 members as a more influential place in the House now.
Okay.
And we receive considerable support from that party. We're hoping, we were told that they will consider it formally as a policy item in caucus sometime this year. So that's been our most encouraging development at the federal level
right.
in Canada. We will hopefully also have a member parliament introduce a private members bill. We also have a draft piece of legislation.
Okay.
And we're hoping, a former diplomat with Foreign Affairs Canada has developed this, and we're looking to someone to sponsor that. But before that, we're hoping that at least we get one of the parties behind it first, which, of course, would give it more weight than if just a private member introduces the bill without that support. But that's where we are. But it's still, you have to say, it is from civil society to government.
Right.
Because, you know, we really have to make this idea really irresistible to government.
Right.
Now, one of the ways we're trying to influence people is this whole question about what are we doing in Afghanistan?
Mm-hmm.
Because there has been no debate. There's been that funny 6 hours that they did for the further extension of the troop commitment, but not about staying there at all,
right,
or being there.
Yeah.
There has been no formal debate. There has been no public hearings. We've had a fundamental shift of foreign policy.
Yeah.
Fundamental shift away from UN peacekeeping. At one time, we were in the first 10 countries. Now we're number 50 in something like 85 contributing countries. We have, I think it's less than 60 peacekeepers now working under the UN. We have abandoned that role almost completely in favor of war fighting, of what they call interoperability with the American armed forces in order to pursue the so-called war on terror, the war that cannot be won.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing in Afghanistan. The government has tried hard to convince us that we're working under NATO. It's not true. We are still under U.S. command.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to shift to NATO. Whether and when it will, I don't know. It's supposed to happen, but it hasn't. We're not any much more supportive of NATO either.
Mm-hmm.
Far, far away from its original mandate as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Okay.
We feel that its role here is not appropriate. And we certainly don't feel that Canada should be carrying out war fighting while at the same time it tries to do what it calls provincial reconstruction. The two things are dramatically incompatible. And
in Afghanistan?
What's that?
Provincial reconstruction in Afghanistan?
Well, they call them they're trying to carry out reconstruction at the same time as they're hunting the Taliban.
Oh, okay.
Hunting the Taliban, you know, doesn't necessarily mean, as you know, they don't wear uniforms.
Okay.
Basically, everybody becomes the enemy, or potentially the enemy. And this is how Afghanis are treated by Canadians, even on the base in Kandahar,
mm-hmm,
as everybody is a potential enemy and is a risk. So you just cannot get there from here if you're trying to do your reconstruction and peace building, which is what a Department of Peace would be carrying out,
yeah,
primarily. And, you know, as a middle power, we should be striking a foreign policy which is independent of the so-called great powers or the world's sole remaining superpower, which we never use that language, but I'm using it now because it seems to me that that language on its own is an incitement to aggression on the part of that so-called superpower. So what we're saying is, in Afghanistan, if you had a department, a minister of peace at the cabinet table, that would require or even force a debate on the direction of Canadian foreign policy in relation to peace building.
Okay,
I get it.
There's
nobody there now.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the point that we're trying to make. We need that focal point in government, which in every issue looks at the peaceful and nonviolent resolution of conflict, or as we prefer to look at it, what we call is conflict transformation by peaceful means.
Mm-hmm.
Because we use the term transformation better than resolution, because resolution implies there's a beginning, a middle, and end of conflict. We don't shy away from conflict. We think that conflict's creative when there are certain rules of the game which are nonviolent in their nature and move towards some kind of transformation of that conflict by peaceful means. So it's our feeling that Canada is really on the wrong track here. But I should also say that, first of all, the Minister of Peace has both foreign and domestic responsibilities.
Okay.
The domestic responsibilities also have to do with the same sort of things in terms of, you know, there are a number of important movements and technologies for conflict transformation that exist, such as nonviolent communication, the work of Marshall Rosenberg.
Okay.
Alternatives to violence projects, restitution projects in the schools. There's a whole number of, and restorative justice in Canada, which is an important and growing movement. These things need federal support. These things require, because, you know, violence, although the incidence apparently of violence has declined in Canada, the magnitude of that violence has increased. The intensity of the incidence has increased.
Right.
And that's true of adolescents as well as adults. And, you know, tackling things like bullying is a very important issue in Canada. And inter-ethnic relations is another very important issue. Look at the way in which this event in Caledonia has been handled, or the previous event that happened in that provincial park where the unarmed Native man was killed. You know, there is a whole... In fact, it tends to move to confrontation all the time with First Nations.
Right.
You know, and people were calling for the army now in Caledonia. As they brought the army in, where each time the army's brought in, it treats the First Nations as terrorists, essentially, and uses all of that approach, which is, I suppose, what they're now trained in. There's domestic responsibilities, too. And under the Department of Peace, there is a commission on peace, headed by a commissioner. Now, there is an example of that, the commissioner on environment and sustainable development. Mm-hmm. That person is an officer of parliament.
Yeah.
And therefore has the right and responsibility to report to parliament each year on progress, if you like, towards reaching those objectives. In the same way, we want to have a commissioner on peace who each year makes annual reports to parliament on Canadian initiatives and their success in peace-building efforts, and also would make an annual report on the consequences of the arms trade in which Canada is deeply involved, and its impact on peace, basically. Obviously, we know that it frustrates peace.
Yeah.
We know that Canada is, I think, among NATO countries, seventh among 19 countries, if I have that right, trading in terms of the international arms trade.
Right.
You know, we have over 100 prime defense contractors in Canada. And even though we weren't going into a so-called, the missile defense question, we are in missile defense.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the question that the ambassador of the day, Frank McKenna, stated the day before the government said it wasn't in ballistic missile defense, that it wasn't going with it. He stated that, I don't know what else the Americans want. We've already given them everything they need. And that was true.
Yeah.
And so the only thing we aren't going to do is pull the trigger. But we are deeply committed, and also 2 years ago, well before this thing even emerged, letters were sent to all our defense contractors from Foreign Affairs or Defense, I don't know who it was, or National Defense, indicating that our defense contractors should ramp up for possibilities of contracts under ballistic missile defense. Mm. So that so-called victory was not a victory at all.
Yeah.
And, so this, all of these questions, we feel that a minister of peace would make a difference in. And that the commissioner's reports will keep before the public, because those documents become public documents, will be something from which we can discuss where we're at as a nation, as a middle power, and what our direction should be. And under the commissioner, there is a commission on peace, which would be made up of essentially civil society organizations, peace and justice organizations, a profile, if you like, or a cross-section of the diversity that represents Canadians, sort of prominent people from different ethnic groups within the country, and they would be providing the oversight role.
Okay.
We think that these things in combination will make a difference. I mean, in 2004, there was a major poll of Canadians, an attitude survey, of how Canadians like to be seen in the world. Now, the most popular response, the plurality, about a third, people said, UN peacekeeping. That's how we like to be seen, and also as a peaceful nation. The second question was interesting, too, because the second most popular choice was humanitarian aid, both of which we're falling badly behind on.
Right.
In terms of, reaching the objective that, in fact, Prime Minister Pearson actually established, which was 0.7 of GDP. We're nowhere near that.
Okay.
And we're not making that commitment yet.
Okay. I'd like to switch our direction here a little bit.
Sure.
What will your group be doing at the forum? What are some of the events or some of the...
We have a morning on June the 25th in the Buchanan building beginning at 8:45.
Okay. At UBC? Is that UBC?
At UBC. Thank you for asking. We will begin with the reading of the communique, which will emerge from the summit in Victoria. We will then move to, it's an international panel of parliamentarians supportive of Departments of Peace.
Okay.
And they will include, from Canada, Senator Doug Roach, from the U.S., Denis Kucinich, as I said, the founding or guiding spirit really behind this movement.
Okay.
We will have a British MP, Elwin Lyde. We will have an Australian Member of Parliament, Arthur Chesterfield Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be one other person which we haven't yet confirmed, but it will be moderated by Marianne Williamson, who is the chairperson of the Peace Alliance in the United States, under which the Department of Peace campaign comes.
Okay.
He's also a famous writer and speaker and workshop leader in the whole field of spirituality and peace.
Okay, which spirituality? Just spirituality in general, or a specific religion, or?
Well, no. It's not a particular religion. No.
Okay.
It is focused on spiritualities in one light in one's life and the relationship between, if you like, spirituality and peace.
Oh, okay.
She's
okay.
Written a famous book called Return to Love. Is one of her books, and another one is The Gift of Change. I mean, she's very well known in the human development movement.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah, right. No, that's very exciting. That's the first part of the morning.
Yeah.
At 10:30, there'll be a press conference of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And at 11 o'clock, there'll be a series of 5 workshops offered in different aspects of what a Department of Peace would look like. And an interactive workshop with people, you know, how would a Department of Peace change the way in which governments function.
Okay.
Another one deals with Departments of Peace as an evolutionary process. That is Marianne Williamson doing that.
Okay, that should be good. Yeah.
That will be very interesting. And then there are 3 other workshops as well, including one by a man named Kai Brand Jakobsen. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is on the website, by the way.
Okay.
To get the names and so forth.
Might as well get that right now. Where would they find that, like, on the website? How would people find that?
.ca under themes. They have the program.
Okay.
Kai is a brilliant facilitator.
Okay.
He has worked all over the world in conflict areas at considerable risk to himself, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And we know his work is brilliant because he did do a workshop for us in London, England, for the first summit. And he'll be doing another one on sort of best practices in peace building, that sort of approach. Finally, we have a Dr. Nina Meyerhoff, who will be talking about the engagement of youth in building departments of peace.
Okay.
There's a strong youth movement that's growing now as well. So those are the workshops that we'll be offering from 11 to 12:30.
All right.
So we're very excited about our program and think that it should be well attended.
Is this open to everyone?
Yes.
Okay.
The summit in Victoria is invitational.
Okay.
But there is a public evening on June 22nd at Royal Roads. We'll be the first reading of the communique.
Okay.
And then all the events of the World Peace Forum, are, as far as I understand it, are open to anybody who wishes to attend.
Mm-hmm.
People were asked to show some preferences on the on the application form.
Okay.
But I don't think they're actually being held to it. It's just an idea of getting some idea for numbers. So,
right.
Yes, come in. We look forward to a vigorous discussion with both the parliamentarians and then the workshop leaders.
Yeah.
And the parliamentarians will be part, they'll be resource people to the workshops as well.
All right. What does the working group hope to achieve?
At the forum?
Yeah.
Well, clearly with the parliamentarians and the press conference, we're trying to increase dramatically the visibility of this idea.
Right, okay.
Both in Canada and abroad. Because remember, this is really on behalf of the whole international movement, not just for Canada. And so, you know, it's difficult to get media. But we feel that this opportunity, I don't think the media will pass this by. With prominent people coming, and I'm sure there'll be coverage of the forum. So we feel that that will advance the whole agenda towards departments of peace. And not only that, but bring people at the forum, bring them into this idea if they haven't encountered it before.
Right.
And through the interactive workshops, be able to, you know, we hope that we'll get significant support from the public. Because as I said, we now have chapters in, as far as the Canadian movement is concerned, we have chapters in Victoria, Vancouver, and Ottawa.
Okay.
We're developing chapters in Charlottetown, Montreal, and Winnipeg. These will be functioning in the fall.
Okay.
So those are our basic objectives, to increase the visibility, develop momentum. You know, we're in this for the long term. We don't think it's going to happen tomorrow morning. It's certainly not going to happen under the Harper government.
Right.
But interesting things happen in minority government situations. You know, so we're working actively with that one minority party, that's the NDP, that's showing interest in our considerable interest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say now we have well over half the caucus on side.
Okay, so it is considerable.
It's just
that's
discussion
good.
That's going on.
Yeah. So is it your feeling that the NDP would take this on if given the power to do so?
They're not anticipating becoming the government.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating kind of thing that can happen in a minority situation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things that can happen is the kind of trade-offs that are necessary in order to gain the necessary votes to pass a piece of legislation the government wants. So It's a long shot, but it's not out of the question that this could become something that is part of that kind of a trade-off. You know, it might be in the first stage something like Parliamentary Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs. You know, the motion in the House might say that the Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs study this idea and report back to Parliament in 3 or 6 months.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to go for the whole thing right away. That's a pipe dream, I think.
Yeah.
But it could happen in that way, you see. So that there is a motion which could be adopted. It sounds harmless enough in a way. It's no commitment. But the Parliamentary Committee, which is really, you know, because of a minority parliament, there's strength from all parties on those committees.
Right.
And therefore, we think that there's... So that's, you know, there's a number of different scenarios. But the main thing is the groundswell, is building that groundswell such that it becomes a popular idea and that the politicians themselves see, you know, that it's something that the electorate wants. It is a vote-getter in the end of the day.
All right.
And the other thing is that, you know, working internationally like this, if one country would declare such a minister, and it could be a small country, could be New Zealand, it could be Costa Rica, it could be another country like that.
Mm-hmm.
That will immediately start a whole different situation. See, we're seeing ministers of peace meeting periodically, like other national ministers meet periodically, whether it be environment or whether it be human resources or whatever, or labor. All of these ministers have international meetings on a regular basis.
Oh, okay.
So the ministers of peace would be meeting on a regular basis with this mandate that we discussed here earlier,
mm-hmm.
and of course more specifically in crisis situations.
Mm-hmm.
The UN Security Council is really so that the ministers of peace would be meeting periodically, and was it the Security Council? I mean, we had a speech 2 days ago from Tony Blair saying that it is completely outdated. That the membership isn't reflective. It's the victorious nations from the Second World War. And it excludes Japan, it excludes Germany, it excludes India or Brazil, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dysfunctional. And it's used by the United States, you know, not in the interests of world peace and security, but in its own national interest. And once one of the five countries undertakes to utilize the UN, to use the UN Security Council in that way, it distorts the whole meaning of the Security Council, what it can achieve, because it's not a global perspective any longer. It's a narrow, self-interested nation that is dominating the proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a dysfunctional Security Council today. In fact, it's an aggressive council. It has powers. And it should have the ultimate powers to be able to use the armed force.
Right.
But I think we all question the whole question of sanctions, how they were used in Iraq, really having a dramatically negative effect on the people and the children of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think that was a good way to go. The Ministers of Peace meeting periodically is another mechanism. It's a new architecture for peace.
Right.
And not only that, but there's one last thing I wanted to say was, you know, we are now in the sixth of the 10-year of the decade for the culture of peace and nonviolence for the children of the world, which is a United Nations decade. Canada is a signatory, not just to the declaration, but to the program of action for a culture of peace, which is a 7 or 8 point program. And we've done virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're moving in the other direction. We're moving towards aggression, towards war fighting, towards interoperability with the U.S. forces and other nations, and losing our independence to be able to act in a way that's contrary to the U.S. or for that matter, primarily the U.S. is the major issue. And the love affair that's going on now between the Harper government and the U.S., I mean, has reached, you know, incredibly embarrassing proportions.
Sure has.
The laudatory speeches that are being made by the ambassador, by the Minister of Foreign Affairs, who just about hugged Condoleezza Rice, saying she's been a hero of his since he was a young man, or something to that effect. And this is embarrassing, and also not really in our interest or that of the world itself.
Yeah.
So, again, a minister of peace and a department of peace would be that focal point in government which would be responsible for implementing that agenda to which Canada has signed. As you know, we signed many international agreements and nothing much happens after that. But they are there on paper. We have signed on to this program and we're moving in a direction opposite.
Do you think that carries any weight, though, that we...
Well, it could. If we acted in good faith, it could carry a great deal of weight in the sense that, you know, we could say that, yes, you know, this is what we're doing. We're going to implement this. But you're right on the point that, like many of the others of these declarations and so forth, they have no sanctions, they have no teeth.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. But ultimately, we think that a minister of peace in the federal cabinet could fundamentally alter the nature of debate and decision-making in the whole area of peace and security, and really redefining security away from, you know, the narrow notion of military security to a notion of security, human security, which talks about the health of individual people and in their communities.
And that's really it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay. What background do you bring into your position here?
I'm a cultural anthropologist, and my primary work is the creation of institutions of the future, like this one.
All right.
I've always worked in, you know, in action anthropology. I worked with the First Nations as in this province, as provincial director of what was then called Indian Education.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked as a consultant in that field. I've always done work. I've worked in academia, but I'm primarily interested in applications of social science.
Mm-hmm.
And been an activist for many years. I've been on the board of the Council of Canadians, a national board, which is our largest public interest and advocacy group for the year 2000 to the year 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the major background that have brought me to this point.
Okay. What do you think are the highlights of the forum? What are the highlights of the forum for you?
Well, you know, that's a big question. There are many.
I mean,
it's got a huge focus on disarmament and nuclear disarmament, which has, you know, taken, you know, been on the back burner. Most groups that were into disarmament sort of evaporated in the 80s when it seemed that the risk was had been diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the fall of the breakup of the Soviet Union. But that's completely untrue.
Mm.
I mean, the risk is exactly where it was. The warheads are in place and are aimed at wherever they're aimed, at the so-called enemies on each side, potential enemies anyway. The Americans are entering a whole new phase of nuclear, which I can't remember what they call them, but bunker busters and other small bombs, and NATO has always kept nuclear first strike capability as policy, and as the United States has on its own, and there's a whole new period now of the development of nuclear armaments and built directly into the warfighting strategies of the United States and probably Britain as well.
Uh-huh.
So, and NATO, so which embraces both of those countries. So the question is, I mean, the point is that this is a very important area, and we're hoping to see increased visibility there. But then there's all these different area focuses, you know, like on the Middle East or Asia. Relationships, you know, there's a whole bunch of these. I don't have them all in front of me, but these are going to be very interesting as well, because they're going to bring together basically civil society actors, and there's a lot of work going on. For example, between Palestine and Israel, there's a tremendous amount of bridge building that's going on, peace building work that's happening that we rarely ever hear of, because, you know, our media tend to respond. We don't have really a peace journalism.
No.
Where the journalists themselves are seeing opportunities in what is going on in the field for peaceful outcomes to conflicts.
Yeah.
They focus on the conflict itself because that's what makes news.
Yeah.
Violence is news. Peace is not.
Yeah.
So the forum will, you know, will bring together these parties in a global situation and move some area, some, you know, move peace building forward in some parts of the world, I think.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
It's interesting to see that the number of countries that since we started this, well, in 2003, there were three countries that had Department of Peace initiatives.
Okay.
Today, there are at least seven serious campaigns, and there are several fledgling campaigns. I mean, like people who are very active in peace work in their countries but are now taking this on.
Mm.
So they have a great background, but they just have, this hasn't been their focus, but it's moving.
Yeah.
Like New Zealand has a great history in terms of nuclear disarmament and also forbidding the entry of American ships, because Americans won't declare whether the ships are nuclear armed, they do not allow American ships into New Zealand ports. And it's an important port because, you know, the land mass is few and far between.
Right.
And that has held up through all the different governments they've even had. They've had right-wing governments there. That has held. That's been upheld. Now they have a minister, they're calling Minister for Peace campaign building there.
Right.
So Australia is another country that is moving, as is Japan. And, you know, one of the things in Japan is the opposition to rescinding Article 9 of their so-called peace constitution, you know, that was developed during the time of the American occupation after World War II,
mm-hmm.
forbids Japan from having a standing army or being engaged in any foreign conflict.
Wow.
And it's under attack right now, seriously under attack by the current Japanese government. There's an attempt to rescind that so they can, in fact, and that's being encouraged by the Americans, so that they can, in fact, build up a new armed force capable of deployment abroad.
Right.
So out of that has come this movement for a Department of Peace as well.
Okay.
The Japanese are extremely active in peace work. I mean, the mayor of Hiroshima is the head of the Mayors for Peace campaign, which is has about 1,100 mayors, including the previous mayor of Vancouver and the current mayor of Victoria, for example,
mm-hmm.
are members, and their strongest suit is nuclear abolition.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is interesting because the municipalities are an organizing base for any movement.
Yeah.
And this is happening. This is an important thing because they're, extremely well organized. You know, when you have 1,100 mayors from around the world, you know, you have a significant movement.
Yes, for sure. It's quite a lot. Well, thank you for your time.
You're more than welcome.